All righty. So here I am on the phone with my friend Sharon Wilsey. And Sharon and I have been friends for, I don't know, Sharon, how long has it been now? 20
years? I think it's 15? About 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is about 20 years. And Sharon is one of my psychic teachers, so a lot of the things that I'm teaching you guys in class, I learned from her about being a psychic, about Reiki, about being a person, a lot of stuff that I know about all kinds of things I learned from Sharon. Sharon is a shaman. She lives in Vermont, and she's also a horse whisperer. And I feel really lucky that we have her on the phone today. So welcome, Sharon.
Sorry, Lisa, I just lost you again.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
I am here, and we were having a little phone difficulties earlier. Okay, there you are. All right. So whatever, if you just asked a question, I didn't hear it.
I just said, how are you, and thank you for being on the call with me today.
All right. I'm doing very well, and thanks for inviting me to be on the call. It's really exciting, and it's always good to get this kind of information out there for practitioners especially. And I know that you and I had to learn this kind of stuff for the same reason that anybody else needs to learn it, which is that when you're working professionally as a healer, you're going to come up against the dark side. And so it's really important to know what to do and also what not to do so that you can be effective and hopefully not get entangled in stuff you don't want to get entangled in.
That's right. So I don't know about you, but I used to not actually believe in curses when I started working. I didn't think they were real until I met somebody that said they had a curse, and I looked and actually found a curse. So I guess my first question for you is, how do you know you really have a curse? Like, how do you tell if it's not just like you need therapy or you're having a bad day, or how do you know you really have a curse?
That is a really good question, and I think that the process of discerning what something is above and beyond, something that might be therapeutic or emotional or even physical, is a big process. And so you can really only describe how you start and how I start in discerning a curse, for instance, is by literally screening out the other possibilities. So I would start with really knowing who I'm talking to as best as you can. And you do have to trust your intuition, and you do have to trust, your guides. Hopefully everybody that's going to be listening to this call knows how to communicate with their guides. And at a certain point now, I feel like there's a certain specific fingerprint that you can relate to that comes from things like curses. That at this point, I think, Lisa, you're the same way, that you could smell it coming down the hall, but at first you get into it and you're like, oh, whoopsie, I think something's happening.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen a couple of different kinds of curses, but one of the most common ones that I see is the generational curse, like the whole family. Right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the generational curse is really common, and that can come from so many sources. I have met people, for instance, from other countries where someone in their family was cursed. They know it. They know, Grandma Bubala was cursed because she stole some other lady's man. And everyone knows Grandma was cursed, and that's been passed down the family. There could be other curses that you don't know about. People will cast curses against someone else for all kinds of reasons, usually petty. And you have no idea that's been passed down in the generation, but everybody gets a heart attack in their 50s, or everybody loses a lot of money. There's just this a pattern that seems to repeat itself. And so that's a big red flag that there is some kind of family curse.
Yeah, so one of the things that I had to learn a little bit that I thought was tricky is how you tell the difference between a curse and somebody's karma, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely something to think about. So for me, the difference between a curse and somebody's karma has to do specifically with whether or not these events happen to more than one people more than one person in the family. So if I'm working with someone and they say, oh, you know, everyone in my family tends to suffer from XYZ, my red flags go up and say, oh, really, tell me more about how everyone suffers from this. As opposed to, I've had a lot of bad luck. You know, everyone else in my family has always had good luck with this, but I don't. So then it still might be a curse, but it might be a curse on that person, not on the family.
And that's a great point. Yeah, that's a good way to tell the difference. And who in your experience does the cursing? Like, does it have to be a shaman, a witch doctor, a voodoo priestess? Or can, like, regular old people like you and me curse, or any Joe Bag of Donuts kind of person, curse another person without knowing it?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Anybody can curse. Anyone can cast what's called the evil eye if they have enough internal natural psychic energy, especially if they're untrained psychics. So they have the energy. It's there. They don't necessarily know they have it. They might even be very religious because they feel and sense so many things. They feel like they need to be, you know, really religious people. But they just have a really dark thought about someone long enough or deep enough that can cast a curse. Those are a lot easier to lift because it's not done intentionally. And then it goes all the way down the line from people who practice any kind of magical art on purpose. And there's so many varieties of that. And going all the way down the line to someone who's, you know, very deep into something like Santeria or hoodoo or voodoo, where you can pay someone to throw a curse for you. And so you can go down to, you know, different parts of the world and actually pay someone to cast a curse for you.
You can go down to downtown Milford and have somebody pop. Okay, you can pay.
Yeah, that is a third world country.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely. All right, yeah, so good to know. That's really good. And what do you think is the best way to get rid of a curse? So when I work on people, I just sort of wrestle with them. And it's hard for me to describe exactly how I do that. So that's one of the things that I really want to hear your take on it. And when I was researching that, I looked it up on the internet, how to remove a curse. I just Googled it. I really seriously did. And I came up with like three basic things. Like one of them is rituals that you can do for curse breaking. The other ones are prayers you can do for curse breaking. And the last one is find somebody else to do it for you. those are the three things I know about, but how would you go about it, or how would you advise the people in the class to do it? If, say, somebody walks in and they've got a curse, one of their clients, what do they do to get rid of it?
Well, actually, I would go back for a moment to the question about karma, and the fact is that a curse can only sneak in where the person has a weak spot or has a karmic propensity in the first place. So you can't levy a curse against someone where they're strong. You can only levy a curse against someone where they already have a weak spot. So the first line of defense is always to do a systematic self-reflection with the person and help them to be clear with themselves about, you know, what are their fears or what are, you know, has they had some trauma in their life, or what do they know they've come in with karmically, or what do you as a healing practitioner, what can you sense they have some karma about? And now that's going to be the entrance point. That's going to be the sneak back door that people who levy curses are going to use. So it's important to first know where your person's blind spots are. And then the second part is to try to figure out who sent the curse, because if it's sent by someone who is an untrained psychic, let's say, then prayer, meditation, doing a, you know, conscientious blocking where you visualize that your bubble of personal space, your auric bubble, is completely protected. You fill up with light, you call in the archangels, there's so many ways to do it. That's going to be probably enough. Burn some sage, that's going to be enough. For other kinds of curses that have been thrown, you need to have a ritual that you're comfortable with, that you can buy into, that you can believe and feel 100% about. So you want to think about all these things like recipes. And so you don't necessarily know how an African witch doctor does his recipe. You don't necessarily know how, you know, a South American shaman does their recipe, but you can know how you do your recipes. And most of the time, if you're very clear about what makes you feel empowered and connected to the source of all things, and you can deeply drop into that place and fill every pocket of your being or of your client's being with that source energy, that's going to be enough to push out something that shouldn't be there. So it's really important for the practitioner to know what they can buy into, because if you don't buy into it 100%, you're not going to muster the necessary juju to push a curse out.
Right. And so somebody in the class asked me, like, do you have to know the person that cursed you in order to do that? And do you have to know how they did it exactly to undo it? Sounds like you don't.
Yeah, in my experience, you don't need to know that. I've dealt with a few curses. A friend of mine was in South America and was working with a tribe to reforest and save the trees, and it was really important work, and the tribe loved this person very much. But he fell in love with the shaman's daughter and was, you know, having an affair, and the shaman found out, cursed him with really terrible boils all over his skin, and he'd been to doctors, and he had to come back to the States, and so we don't know exactly what the shaman did or how they did it, but we were able, in that case, to surround him with enough healing energy and connecting his core to the source. And then also what we did in that case was journey to the spirit world for him and have a meeting. We arranged a meeting through our guides with the shaman's energy. And that can be done just like any other journey can be done. And we said, hey, look, you know, sorry about that. He did that. That was wrong. He won't ever do it again. Could you please lift the curse? And he did, and the man's boils went away the next day. And that's
wow.
That type of thing I've done several times with different people. One man that was in Africa, he was setting up medical establishment in Africa, and he didn't realize how important, you know, the local witch doctor's reputation was, and so he got sick with a liver disease and had to come home to the States and stop the program and blah, 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 and he came to me, and he didn't believe in curses at all, but he literally didn't know what else to do, and he couldn't complete his work. So, again, I went to bat. I went into the spirit world. That witch doctor would not meet with me in the spirit world, so I had to arrange instead between my guides and the witch doctor's guides to lift the curse so that the man could go back to Africa and meet the witch doctor face-to-face and, you know, and have a conversation. Which liver disease went away within 3 days. He went back to Africa. He met the witch doctor face-to-face and said, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to step on your toes, gave him some gifts, made sure he was involved in the whole project. Everything went swimmingly. So those are two cases that are similar where the practitioner, if they're skilled enough to journey in that way, because that's what I do, I practice shamanism, you can go to bat for someone. But I had already done Reiki healing sessions on these people. I had already gotten a sense of where the back door was in them. I already had a feeling of what the curse smelled like, felt like, tastes like, you know, looks like a duck, walks like a duck, is probably a duck. So I had already done my homework and my research, and I'd already made sure that both of these people were clear-minded, were doing their own personal growth, all that stuff. So then if I'm going to go to bed with someone, I trust reasonably that it's probably going to work.
Yeah, those are great stories. And just so they know what you're talking about, when you're talking about journeying, that's sort of traveling psychically to the other plane and having your conversation over there in sort of the shamanic world, the lower world, the lower
yes.
realm where the shamans operate. That's what you mean, right?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So specifically when you're working with the curse, you're going to work between the lower world where the power animals are, because they're going to be of a lot of assistance in this kind of transaction, and the middle world where we all live, because that's where the curse was cast. And so you're
right.
going to go between lower world and middle world, calling in upper world energies for help and assistance, but they're not as, the problem of a curse is that it's in this realm of density. So you need to keep your psychic travel to this realm of density. Another way of thinking about it would be, it's a little bit like stuff in the astral world. You're not astral traveling. I wouldn't recommend astral traveling when you're dealing with a witch doctor. you want to stay
yeah.
real close to home and stay real close to your body. So the alternative, if you don't know how to journey shamanically, is to create a safety space for yourself, however you do that, and call your guides into the safety space where you can psychically communicate back and forth.
Right. And so a psychic safety space might be like a ring of salt on the ground or a circle of rope I've seen people do, or just a saging in a circle, something that creates that safe space that you're talking about, right?
Exactly. And you could be inside or outside. You could be in your meditation room, or you could be in a sacred place in nature. It just depends on, you know, what works for you. Something that I've taught people to do is to have a spirit house that they are familiar with going to. And I usually see it as this quaint little English cottage. That's just what it comes to for me. But everyone will have their own version of a spirit house. This is easy to do. And you do it when you don't need to do it, when it's not important, so that it's just something that's easy and fun. And it's a safe place to go spiritually. So when
right.
you're in your spirit cottage, there's a gate, there's a door, it's yours, no energies can come in that aren't invited. So that's a sacred space in the spirit world that you could at least have some conversations with other beings in. That would be a safe space in the spirit world. You could also
yeah.
then reinforce it in this world. Yep.
But, yeah, that's right. So my students have learned a similar technique from me using something I call the inner sanctuary.
Yep.
And that's their sort of inner temple, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, that you talked about it, you know, it can be anything from a grove of trees to a temple to a cottage, whatever, you know. So we
yep.
they've already worked a lot with the inner sanctuary, so they know what that is. So
good. So that will work because it's a good middle place. You won't always get people who sent the curse are not always going to be agreeable. You know, some of them, like the witch doctor, felt like his turf was invaded.
Yeah.
And the shaman from South America felt like, hey, this is my daughter. You know, so they were more agreeable to have a conversation. But there may be someone who really is into the dark side, and they're not going to show up.
Yeah, I know. The hardest curse that I ever dealt with, that I never felt like I really actually 100% lifted it off this person. Because the person that cursed them, they were not trained. They were like a natural raw shaman or psychic. But there was so
yeah.
much hatred. Like, they hated this person. And they continued to hate this person. They hated this person. Like, it was that person's ex-spouse. And I couldn't do anything about it because they were constantly pouring more hate into the thought form. And it was really touch and go, you know. In fact, But finally, the only thing, the way this person could get rid of it was to sort of change their name and move across the country, you know.
Drop
off the radar so far that that person stopped sending them this hate. I've never felt that much hate from one person before.
That's very intense. I do have a good one for that. It's called the give a dog a bone exercise. And what it is, it's an old shamanic practice where you cultivate a psychic bone. It's important to see it as a bone because bone has the right density. It has the right feel. It has the right texture. It has the right kind of life force around it. And you might even have a bone. You might have a bone that you work with at first to get this this up into your psychic field. And basically you cast this bone, and it's on the very edge of your auric field. So if you're in your inner temple, for instance, it would be at the gate or the moat of the temple. And what you're doing is you're spinning the bone, you're moving the bone, you're touching the bone, you're thinking about the bone, and you're assigning the bone the same essence as yourself.
Right.
But you're keeping it out there and away from you. And what happens is it's give a dog a bone. So whatever negative energies are coming your way, they find the bone and they stick to that because you're sequestered behind the bone. And this is a great diversionary tactic for really sticky situations that can give people at least enough relief where they can get stronger than the negative energy coming at them.
Wow, that's a great idea. The one of the tricks that I learned that's sort of like that, I learned actually from a magic witch. She was a witch Wiccan, and she said that she uses mirror energy to break curses. So she literally uses mirrors. She hangs mirrors in parts of the person's house, or she has them think about that whole outer edge of their energy field, like a mirror, like mirrored sunglasses. So she says that's a little bit of like return to sender energy, you know?
Yeah.
So whatever vibe is getting sent your way, it bounces it back to the person who's casting the curse.
I'm sorry, I just lost you again.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Hopefully I can hear you again
hear
in a
now?
Minute.
So anyway, she said she felt like that was she said that was a really powerful technique for doing that.
I would agree that mirror magic can be very powerful if you know how to place the mirrors and how to work with them, because mirror magic can also be really destructive and a little bit chaotic and out of control. So I would suggest anyone that wanted to work with mirrors, go slowly, practice a few mirrors at a time, and learn a lot about feng shui mirrors, because you can also up the ante by accident if you put them not quite in the right placement. That's been my experience with mirrors.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it's a little scary. So mirrors are a bit of a dicey. They're a bit of a mixed bag, really, aren't they?
They can be. If you wear a mirror on yourself facing outward, that's pretty safe because the mirror is reflecting back whatever's coming at you. So you're wearing a small mirror like on your chest or something. That, to me, that's pretty safe. Or even something that's reflective that you're wearing as a necklace, something shiny and reflective. That's pretty safe. That's not going to get you in too much trouble.
What about the old... Your old Italian grandmother used to break the evil eye with like a needle and a thread in a pot of water, right? Do you ever hear of that one?
Yeah, there's a lot of old Italian grandmother break the curse. So when you're using pointy objects to break curses, you're literally nailing down the energy and putting it someplace else. So another way to think about the curse is that it's coming towards you, like it's been, you've been dialed up. Someone's got your station on the radio, and they're aiming this thing at you. So if you use a needle and you poke it into something and then put it into water, you're diverting the energy and then dispersing it through the water. If you use nails and put them in a jar full of urine, your own urine, and you put that jar in the yard buried, that's really good. That will very much nail down and divert anything. And just like dogs pee on their turf, you know, you're leaving your urine to nail down your territory. That's a good one. That one is for immediate energies that are, it's like people that are live down the road, you know, that
right.
are bothersome. Maybe they haven't cursed you, but they're, you think they might be. They're looking at
yeah.
you funny.
Yeah, I've heard that one too. I've heard that's a good one. Wow. So, is there, I want to tell people just, you know, before, while we're still talking about this, how to contact you. And what kind of work would you do with somebody, you know, around this? Like, how would you work? What kind of work do you like to do with people, and how would people contact you to get you?
Okay. Well, my website is higherselfarts.com. And you can Facebook me. You can email me at SharonWilsey@gmail.com. Sharon Wilsey on Facebook. And I'm happy to work with people that are having, you know, unique challenges where they feel like they've tried a lot of other things and they want to see, you know, give it one last shot. That's a lot of the people that end up in my lap. So, and I like interesting cases that I really scratch my head on and say, huh, that's really in there. Let's see what we can come up with. I've got a bag of tricks. So, you know, for one phone call, we've given a decent amount of, get off to a good start. It's always going to be important to make sure that you're as a practitioner, that you are extra careful when you're working with someone else's curse, because you don't want backlash. So that's just something
right, so
I wanted to add to the conversation.
How would they do that? How would they be extra careful? Like, what would that look like?
It looks like not thinking about your client when they're not there. Really is the biggest thing. You want to de-link psychically from them. If you want to say, all right, I'm going to, from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to do a little research because I'm confused and I'm going to think about this person, but at 4 o'clock, I'm shutting it off. That's fine. But you don't want to have in the background, gee, I wonder how Susie Q is doing. You know, it's very important to de-link yourself from your clients anyway. But under curse or any other black magic or dark energy, you really want to de-link from your person. I like to use my hands and actually palms up. I Reiki the space between us so that I'm creating a spaciousness after the healing session has happened. I'll also have mantra that I'll say to myself to reestablish my own core, my own center. Only my thoughts, only my feelings. That's another good one to say three times. Doing things in rituals of three, so touching the earth three times, only my thoughts, only my feelings three times. I would also cover your belly button and circle your third eye. This is a trick I learned from one shaman. You circle your third eye three times with your fingertips, and then you, as though you're pulling a string off and flicking it. That was connected to that person. And covering your belly button is important because, of course, the invisible umbilical cord will connect lovingly to everyone, but you don't want it connected to the situation. So you need to cover it in the presence of that person when you're done. Make sure that it goes back inside yourself. So those are a couple of emergency, like, do it every time treatments just to make sure that you are delinked from your client.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really important. So you're really actually one of the few, I have a few people on my friends and colleagues who don't mind working with dark things. You know, I find it really common sort of in the New Agey circles of they don't want to talk about it, they don't want to acknowledge it, they don't want to deal with it. And I find that annoying and frustrating because I do so much clinical work, you know, that over time, if you get your hands on enough people and you deal with people that have real problems, real trauma, you know, real shit. You see some real shit, you know? So
That's true.
One of the things that I always really appreciated about you is your as a friend and as a colleague and as a healer, you're one of the least afraid people I know of that stuff. You're like, yep, bring
Thanks.
It on. It's kind of interesting, you know? And you don't run away. You don't run away from it. You sort of lean into it, or you turn into it, or you look into it. And I find that very rare, you know, and pretty special. So I appreciate that about you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you appreciating me.
Yeah,
we have the
Mutual
Admiration Society. I think for myself, I had a run-in with a particularly dark and nasty thing that attacked me for about 3 months when I was 33. And it wanted me to drive off a cliff, and it wouldn't let me sleep, and it would levitate me out of the bed, and I'd wake up with scratches and bite marks, and sometimes it would sit at the end of my bed and ooze and smell like dead fish. And, you know, this went on and on and on and on, and it would try attacking me mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. It was just, what is it going to take to break down your will is what it was doing to me. You know, it's just going to break me down till I quit. But I didn't quit. And so finally it said, well, fine, you know, if you get rid of me, you won't have any psychic power. You know, it was trying to trick me in that way. And I said, fine, I'll work at a bank. That's cool. If I could take the psychic power, I don't care. So that was it. That was the last ditch. It really thought it was going to snag me with that one. And I learned how to defend myself, protect myself, defend my home, protect my kids. I learned how to go to a very deep reservoir inside myself of source and stay linked there no matter what. I learned how to light up my subatomic particles. And that's something that I teach people to do, is to light up from your particle level. We're all made of atoms. The atoms have been here forever. When you die, they'll still be here. Atoms don't go into, they're all energy. That's what we're made of. So when you can use your consciousness to cause your atomic structure to light up, there's no space for things to fit.
Right.
So I learned a lot of stuff, and now my take on life is like, that sucked so bad. It was so hard, and there was really no one I could turn to. So I you know, if someone is suffering on that level, I'd like to at least try to help.
Right. That's great. And that was a great segue, because I think our next class we're going to talk about entities and shadow creatures and things like that, and that's next on the rota. So that was a great segue into that whole topic. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. I thought it was totally interesting, and I learned a lot from what you said. And tell people again just your website, so if they want to contact you, they can.
Okay. My website is higherselfarts.com. My name is Sharon Wilsie, Wilsie. And you can find me, you can Gmail me, so SharonWilsie@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook. And any of those methods of contacting me, I will get back to you within a few days. Usually I'm pretty good on online to connect with people, especially if someone's really having a crisis.
Awesome. Yeah, that's so true. So there's just been so many times you've showed up for me when I was having a crisis over the past 20 years. So thank you for that, too.
I have the crisis radar. I'm like,
yeah, you do.
Blip, blip,
you do
blip,
have
blip.
The crisis radar. All right, Sharon, thank you so much for talking to me about this. I know my students are going to totally love what you said. I totally love what you said, and I appreciate so much your time. So thank you.
Thanks,
honey.
All right.
Let's
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
All right. Let's talk soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye.